Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Coming up on the show, photographer Deborah Feingold has helped chronicle the careers of Mick Jagger, Madonna, Alicia Keys, and many others. She joins us for a look back at her remarkable career. Plus, the married couple behind the blog, My Husband's Stupid Record Collection, have now reached letter C on their journey through 1,500 dusty old LPs. They'll join us to talk about two albums by the electronic pioneer, Wendy Carlos. Plus, the contemporary electronic duo, Sylvanesso, performs in the studio. But before we get to any of that, I am contractually obligated to play this. Ask me, ask me, ask me.
Hey, let me give them what they're asking for. Hey.
There are more questions than answers.
Ask me why.
I'll say I love you.
I love that theme song, John.
Ladies and gentlemen, Soundcheck's executive producer, Joel Meyer.
Great to be back, John. Glad you asked me.
So this was your idea, the Ask John Schaefer Anything About Music.
It's been going great guns all week. Soundcheck listeners have been posting questions on soundcheck.org. They've been tweeting questions to us. They've been leaving questions on our voicemail, 866-939-1612. All right, let's hear from one great caller.
Hi, my name is Walter. I'm from Long Island. And I was wondering what three songs sum up your teenage years.
Oh, wow.
Sum up your teenage years in three songs, John.
Oh, man. Wow. Gosh. I'm going to have to say, I'll say Psycho Killer by Talking Heads. That was a big one.
Okay.
Psycho Killer.
Probably something from David Bowie's Station to Station album, maybe TVC-15. And you know, I'm going to have to go obscure because, you know, I misspent a fair number of my teenage years at the old CBGBs where I knew the band, The Shirts, and they had a song called Poe, which I don't know if they ever recorded it, but it was just, you know, I still hear that song playing in my mind's internal recorder.
So that sums up your teenage years.
Yeah, I guess so.
Are you sure? Is that your final answer?
I don't know. If you ask me again in 5 minutes, I'll probably have three different songs.
Well, John, here on Soundcheck, we pride ourselves in journalistic integrity. So I have called someone who can verify this. Can we put Jerry from Queens on the air, please?
Oh, no!
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Joel.
How's it going now? Did you hear John's three picks that sum up his teenage years?
I did hear his picks. I kind of concur with them. I kind of thought he was going to say something from the David Bowie Lowe album, personally.
Maybe, yeah, I thought so, too. I thought so, too, Jerry. But, now for listeners out there that don't know who Jerry from Queens is, he is John Schaefer's brother.
Right. And you know, close enough in age that we listened basically to, I mean, we're less than a year apart. So we were teenagers pretty much the whole time together.
Well, I don't want to break up the Schaefer family reunion here on Soundcheck. But Jerry, we've brought you on because we felt you should participate in our project, Ask John Schaefer Anything About Music. So fire away.
All right. Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask John two questions. And expect honest answers. And
all right.
I will preface it by giving my answers first. My first question, the worst song ever recorded or the worst song that you just absolutely hate that makes you want to punch someone in the face when you hear it. I will start out. My song that stupid song by Melanie, I think it was around 1969, Brand New Pair of Roller Skates.
Brand New Key.
Nah, that's not it.
The lyrics, the tone of her voice, the whole thing. I just want to run my head through a brick wall when I hear it.
Jerry, that song is not really about a roller skate or a key.
I do know that. This is a family-friendly show. I'm trying to keep it family-friendly, so let's stay with the course, yeah.
All right.
I rode my bicycle past your window last night.
That is one of the songs that just drives me. I hear the tone of her voice.
Can I answer your question now?
The project is not called Ask Jerry Schaefer Anything About Music.
All right. The song that does that to me is probably Wildflower. The one about the horse. She ran calling Wildfire.
Oh, yeah, Murphy. Something.
Is it Wildfire?
Wildfire. Yeah. Michael Murphy.
They call it Wildfire.
Yeah, I didn't want to sing it, but yes.
I wouldn't say I call that singing, but yes.
Yeah, that's the
that
one
is
that
definitely in the same vein. Yes.
Yeah, that's fingernails on a blackboard for me.
She ran calling.
Okay, Jerry. Okay. All right, Jerry. Question number two for Ask John Schaefer Anything About
All
Music.
Right. I need an honest answer, and again, I'll give you mine. A song that you like, but are either ashamed or embarrassed to admit. So I'm going to give you mine, and I'm going to get lambasted, and I'm going to get all types of trouble, but here we go. The song, I believe it was 1973, it was called Precious and Few, and I think the name of the group was Climax. I have no idea why I like it. But something about the guy's voice and the harmonies, I can't shut the stupid song off.
Okay.
Well,
and that does not go with the Stones or Bowie or Talking Heads or anything like that.
Yeah.
It goes kind of with something Mom and Dad will listen to.
Well, let the lambasting begin, Jerry. John, your answer, your honest answer?
Well, Joel, you know this because we've done a segment on guilty pleasures in the past. I honestly can't think of a song that I like that I wouldn't actually own up to liking. I mean, I just kind of feel like if I like it, I must like it for a reason. I'm really hard-pressed, Jerry, to come up with an answer.
Well, I guess you are cooler than I am because I got to be honest with you. That song is so bad, Precious and Few, but why do I like it? I have no idea.
It's a pretty bad song.
Jerry, I'd like to thank you so much for telling us so much about yourself while asking John questions.
It was my pleasure, guys.
Take care.
See you, Jerry.
Take care. Bye.
Precious and Few are the moments we two can share.
All right, Soundcheck listeners who are not immediate members of my family, feel free to play our game. Ask me anything about music. That is the task that Joel has set. Our number is 866-939-1612. Leave a voicemail message. Or you can email us, soundcheck@wnyc.org.
Or you can leave your question on soundcheck.org and read some of the other great questions that your fellow listeners have been posting there. That's half the fun of this whole project is seeing what others came up with.
All right. So more to come.
More to come. Thanks, John.
Thanks. Almost from the beginning, pop music has been as much about visual style as it has been about the music, whether it's Bono's Shades or Madonna's Pout or David Byrne's Big Silly Jacket. Artists have relied on images to convey their message, and every photograph needs a photographer. Deborah Feingold has been taking portraits of musicians for more than 30 years, and she has a new book coming out called Music. It collects pictures of everyone from Mick Jagger, who's on the book's cover, to Alicia Keys. And a note to listeners, a picture may be worth 1,000 words, but we have yet to figure out how to broadcast them over the radio. So to see some of the images we're talking about, visit soundcheck.org. Deborah Feingold, welcome.
Thank you so much.
So let me ask you, I mean, this is such an eclectic book, musicians from the worlds of rock and jazz and hip-hop and blues. Where did you get started? What was your entry into the music world?
Well, I fell in love with a jazz musician back in the late 70s. And I ended up, we were living in Boston, moving to New York with him. And that was, as you can imagine, a real life changer.
Mm-hmm. New York in the 70s. I remember it well.
It was incredible. And he had a friend that he'd gone to college with that was starting his own jazz label. And that was called Artist House. Mm. And one of their artists was Chet Baker. So as friends do for each other, my friend went on the road with Chet Baker, and I was offered the assignment to photograph him. So that was my very first professional photo shoot.
Start with the legendary Chet Baker.
I did start with him.
Wow. And how did that, I mean, at what point did you think, hey, I can actually do this?
Well, I had such passion for the music and the life that I think it was just a love affair that just kept evolving and evolving from the very beginning.
Yeah. Now, that Chet Baker photo comes early in the book, Music, and you know, it will have a kind of unsettling resonance for fans of Chet Baker.
Yes. I was told to go to someone's apartment on East 96th and the river, East River. And I don't remember anyone being there but the two of us. And I don't know who was more quiet, him or me. But I basically, it was a series of, could you sit here? Thank you. Would you sit there? Thank you. Could you put your head that way? Thank you. So I worked every space that I possibly could in there. And one of them was I asked if he would sit in the window overlooking the East River. And I think we both know.
He is assumed to have committed suicide by falling out of a window some years after you took that shot.
Yes.
Deborah Feingold is the photographer. Her book, Music, is out on September 30th. And so are you trying, I mean, it's an interesting kind of thing. What are you trying to grasp with these? Is it the essence of the music or the essence of the person who's making it?
That's a really good question. One thing that I learned from the jazz musicians was, or that struck me and has never left me, was improvisation.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of turned my world upside down because it wasn't just in the music. It was the lifestyle as well. And it suited me. You know, growing up in the 50s, it was so refreshing by the time I hit the 60s to kind of live that out and just be in the moment. So I did try to take the music and the person and come up with something that I'd never, for lack of a better word, heard or seen before.
Well, and there are some very striking photos in your collection, some of which seem like they might have been carefully planned, and others seem to be just like, well, what is Brian Eno doing? I mean, I don't even know what that is that he's sitting on or in. He's like in a kind of almost like a square box that looks like it's made of roofing tar or something.
And that is exactly what it is.
So, Brian, would you get into this box of roofing tar?
That photo, you know, I was aware of the type of music that he played, and I knew that it was very minimalist. So he was living in Soho in a penthouse loft, and I got there, and he was doing all this crazy video work. And I was kind of waiting and waiting and waiting for my turn, and then I walked out onto the roof, and I saw that space just there. There was nothing else on there. And I just kind of thought about minimalist music and how can I use him to show that in a photograph. So he becomes very small and lost in this space and yet still very significant. And that was the impetus for that shot. Yeah. And it was just while I was there.
So he's in this kind of featureless landscape, which for the inventor of quote-unquote ambient music is pretty much perfect. A little bit of Brian Eno's ambient music classic called Music for Airports. He is one of the subjects of Deborah Feingold's new book called Music, a series of photographs, many of them dating back to the late 70s, early 80s. So at that point, how long would you spend, how long would an average shoot take? And how did you make the decision whether to shoot in black and white, as with Eno, or color, as with some of the others?
The shoots varied on time, but generally they were really, really brief. And color in black and white, well, when I was beginning, I didn't know how to do anything but black and white. And it's a funny question because when I finished the Chet Baker shoot, and they asked for color, I hand-colored the photographs.
Really?
Yes.
How do you do that? Is it you tint?
I tinted them. My father had taught me how to develop film and print when I was about 12 years old in our basement. And I used those same oils from the 40s to hand-tint the pictures. I grew up in Life magazine, and my inspiration was photojournalism in many ways and portraiture, and everything I'd ever seen had been mostly in black and white, and I find it extremely expressive.
Well, the cover of Deborah Feingold's book, Music, is a black and white portrait of, I'm gonna say Mick Jagger, but I'm taking you at your word here because I can't tell who this is. Tell us the story of how this cover shot. And again, folks, you can see it on our website, soundcheck.org. Tell us the story of how this came about.
Well, I was hired by CBS Records to do a publicity photo shoot for his solo album that was coming out. And he showed up at my photo studio, ready to go, all biz. And I'm shooting, everything's, and I'm nervous, of course. It's really challenging when you're a really big fan as well. You know, try to stay cool in those circumstances. So I was shooting, things are going really well, and then all of a sudden, my light, I hear an explosion, and the flash tube breaks. So I stay in position while my assistants run to fix it, because what you don't want is to lose that groove of a shoot. Mm-hmm. I don't take my eye off of him. So they're working behind me, but I'm still watching. And it was really out of the corner of my eye. That's just one moment in time. And I caught it. And it's always been a very, very special moment to me, because you don't see his face, but to me, you know who he is. Although a few people have thought it was Michael Jackson. Maybe that's the shoes and the short pants and white socks.
It is Mick Jagger obscuring his face with his forearms, basically. It looks like he's protecting himself. And if something had just exploded, I don't know.
Possibly. You're quite right. That's possible.
No sitting down on your butt. The world don't owe you. No sitting down in a room.
Let's Work is the name of the song from Mick Jagger's solo record Primitive Cool. And Deborah Feingold's work is photography, including a 30-year career shooting musicians of all stripes. Mick Jagger is on the cover of her forthcoming book called Simply Music. And Deborah Feingold is with me here in the Soundcheck studio. A lot of the kind of the charm of looking through some of the older photos is realizing with a shock who you're looking at. You know, it's like, oh, my God, that's Bono. I think I looked at this. There's like a series of four photos. I looked at all four. And I was like, I know who this is. Who is this? And it was like, oh, my God, that's Bono. Because it's at the very beginning of his career. He doesn't have the glasses. I know it's so there are those moments. You were there kind of at the beginning of some major careers, including Madonna, who is also in the book. Tell us about that shoot.
Well, that was a really exciting shoot in that it's one of two shoots in my entire career that I facilitated. I was really excited about what I was hearing, and so I just started calling writers and editors if I could do a shoot with her, and one of them said yes. It was a magazine called Star Hits, and I was friendly with the editor, and he's like, sure, set it up. I don't even think they ran it. But how lucky was I? That photograph of Madonna, it's shot against black. It was shot in my apartment, a little tiny studio apartment in the West Village. Everything in that room folded up, the bed, the table, the chairs. So by the time she came in, it looked like a real teeny tiny photo studio. Uh-huh. She came in with just her publicist, and it was me and someone who was helping me. I think the photo shoot lasted about 20 minutes, and in the end, it was just two girls working.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every photo, I think I shot four rolls of film, and every photo is a different pose. That girl was working it,
yeah.
And I just kind of followed her through. I cannot give an explanation. The photo series is referred to as the lollipop series. I did not call it as that because she's sucking on a lollipop. Yes, I had a bowl of lollipops and bubblegum. I don't know why. I don't know why.
Do you often do that? Do you have props and stuff?
You know, once in a while I'll bring one thing. I can't say that I put that much thought into it. I didn't expect it to turn out and be such a recognizable image, but there is an innocence in that whole series that is just from that time.
Yeah, but there's also a knowing look in her. I mean, you see
yeah.
the Madonna.
There was no BS. It was just, like I said, it was two girls just working one snap after the next. She knew we were done. I knew we were done. And I unfolded the furniture and went back to my life.
You can check out the photo of Madonna, one of the photos in the Lollipop series, on our website at soundcheck.org. And around that time, she was also making this music.
Huh?
to Vintage Madonna, the song Borderline. Madonna, one of the many musicians celebrated in Deborah Feingold's book of photographs called Music, comes out on September 30th. Deborah Feingold's here today with us on Soundcheck. One of the other things that struck me is that, Deborah, some of the photos in this book are not what most other photographers would consider traditionally beautiful or perfect photographs. There's one of the great jazz musician Mal Waldron, for example, where there's like a tendril of cigarette smoke, and it's obscuring one of his eyes. But when you did a shoot, say, for example, I mean, Mal Waldron, that was certainly not the only photograph of him you took, and there probably were traditionally beautiful shots of him. Who makes the decision that that's the one? That's the one that we're going to use, or that's the one that's going to go in the book, in the magazine, whatever?
Well, I have to be really honest. Back then, they let me choose.
Who were you shooting for when you got these remarkable photos of Prince?
I was shooting for a local downtown paper called Soho Weekly News.
Oh, yeah.
And
now, they folded in what, the mid-80s? So we're talking early 80s,
probably? Yeah, this was 1980.
Okay.
I got the call from the photo editor, and he said, there's a new, young, hot guy coming to the Bottom Line, which was such a great venue to play in, to hear music in, but also to shoot in. Except there was a little caveat. I had to photograph him backstage, but they hadn't gotten permission. And so I knock on the door, and this really large man answers, and I'm like, you know, hi, I'm from the Village. I mean, the Soho Weekly News, and they asked if I would do a portrait backstage, and they're like, yeah, we don't do that. And then I'm like, okay, thank you. And I rush back, actually relieved. The opening act's coming on, and I get a tap on my shoulder, and that same man says to me, you were so nice about that. Come on back and take some photos.
Wow.
So it's Prince and myself, and we're in this little tiny, tiny room. I shoot it horizontally. I shoot it vertically. He lifts his foot up. He lifts his foot down, and I didn't even finish a roll of film, and suddenly I hear come out of my mouth, would you like to take a picture of me? Again.
Wow.
And so I have a photograph of myself by Prince.
Nice.
But really what I left with that, and I keep to this day, is gratitude and politeness. They don't have to do anything for me. No one owes me anything. In fact, it is my pleasure, my joy, and I've always been very respectful.
Well, what a nice story, early in your career and, of course, early in Prince's career.
Yes.
You can see some of Deborah Feingold's photos, including some of the outtakes from this Prince session and the hand-tinted Chet Baker photo you mentioned earlier, on our website at soundcheck.org. Her book is called Music, and it is out on September 30th. Deborah, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next, an update from the New York librarian who is systematically listening through every album in her husband's record collection in alphabetical order. And after that, the band Sylvanesso performs in our studio. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Sarah Ohala is a mild-mannered librarian, is there any other kind, who, for the past several months, has been listening to her husband's 1,500 vinyl records, one at a time, in alphabetical order. She's been writing about that experience on a Tumblr site called, and I'm quoting here, My Husband's Stupid Record Collection. From time to time, we like to check in with Sarah and her husband, Alex Goldman, who is a producer on the WNYC program On the Media and co-host of the podcast TLDR. Today, Sarah and Alex are here to talk about two albums by the electronic composer Wendy Carlos.
I've been going through Alex's records since the winter, listening to all of them in alphabetical order, because that's how he has them arranged. So we're finally in the C's, and that means we've gone through a Wendy Carlos stretch, because Alex is a pretty big fan of Wendy Carlos. The first one we were going to talk about is the Tron soundtrack from the 1982 Disney film.
So Tron was one of the only Disney movies that I liked as a kid because I wasn't a Mickey Mouse fan. I was like a Bugs Bunny fan, and that was like a big thing in my house. But Tron was really cool looking. It was like the first movie that had video, like computer animation. I loved video games growing up, so it was like it had everything in it for me. Part of my love for it was the Tron video game cabinet that they had in the arcade. It was like so cool looking. It was like luminescent and it had black light on it, and the joystick was blue and it lit up. And it wasn't like every other game where you just had like Pac-Man where it was just like you collect dots, or Galaga where you just shot aliens. It was like there were four different games within the game. And also in the game were little bits and pieces, sort of, you know, low res MIDI versions of the Tron score. Always really, really liked those. And so when I got old enough to start collecting records, I was on the hunt for the Tron soundtrack because it just sounded kind of, it represented something really cool and otherworldly to me in my childhood.
Well, I grew up with Disney pretty hardcore, love Disney movies, and Tron is probably the only Disney movie that I've never really even heard of slash definitely never saw, didn't know anything about the video game. So it's, you know, pretty typical, I feel like, in our relationship that the one Disney movie I've never seen is the one Disney movie you ever connected with.
Why don't we listen to the opening song from the Tron soundtrack?
Love that. When I hear it, it's just like so, it just like builds in this beautiful way. It's so angelic. It's so relaxing. It's just like beautiful.
Did you know anything about Wendy Carlos when you started listening to this?
No.
So midway through the process of reviewing the first record, which was the Tron soundtrack, I kind of accidentally let you know that Wendy Carlos began her life as Walter Carlos and transitioned from male to female in the 70s, which was pretty rare at the time. How did that make you feel about her as a composer?
Well, I found it interesting, but one of the first things I noticed about Tron was I said, oh, this music is by a woman. So that first stood out to me, especially because it's, I guess, related with electronic composing. And then, yeah, I was surprised because it's not something you hear often.
She has a pretty robust website that you really loved and found yourself exploring.
I love Wendy Carlos' website. Her website is what every person's website should aim to be like. You know, most websites are just like kind of like a Wikipedia page. Like, you always go to that, like the personal section of the Wikipedia page, and it's so disappointing. Like, you never really get any real information besides like, oh, they got married in this year, but you want to know like, well, what was that relationship like? And she seems like a very private person, and she doesn't really talk about her transition from Walter to Wendy on the website at all, I'm pretty sure. I don't remember seeing anything about that. But she just will write about things. She writes about her experience at right after 9/11. She writes about her cats a lot. and she posts different essays about her and things like that. And after listening to four of her albums and really reading a lot of her website, because there are just so many pages on it, you could read it for days.
What did you think of the Clockwork Orange soundtrack?
It was good. You know, I haven't seen Clockwork Orange since I was in high school, and seeing it was like this big ordeal because it's so, you know, racy and there's all these like horrible scenes in it, and I had this experience where I kept trying to watch it and adults kept walking in the room at like the worst possible time and like making me turn it off.
But you were enjoying it?
No, I mean, I wasn't enjoying it. It's not really the kind of movie I like. When I saw you had the soundtrack, I wasn't really that excited about it, except for the fact that it was Wendy Carlos, and I was just starting to get into her, so I was like, okay, well, I'm listening to this to listen to Wendy Carlos, not because of the movie. But it did actually make me want to watch the movie again, which I was really surprised by. Well, although I haven't yet, and it didn't make me want to that much that I actually have, but I had the thought of, like, well, maybe I'd watch it again.
Well, let's listen to the Wendy Carlos version of Ode to Joy from the Clockwork Orange soundtrack.
It's just so pleasant.
It's weird that you would say it's so pleasant. It sounds, to me, it sounds like a broken computer a little bit, which is not to say that I don't like it. That's totally, a broken computer is the sound kind of thing that I would love to listen to. But
no, it sounds like pleasant and futuristic, but then at the same time, like Ode to Joy is this song that we all know and is really old. But it, this song sounds really futuristic, and it's just, like, happy. I just feel like I could listen to it all the time.
It's a pretty stark contrast to your experience watching Clockwork Orange.
Yes. Just, like, in this, like, happy land. Just thinking of Wendy and her cats. It just makes me feel really good. For my husband's stupid record collection, that's my husband, Alex Goldman.
And that's my wife, Sarah Ohala.
All this week on Soundcheck, as you may have heard at the top of the show, I've been fielding questions from listeners for our project, Ask John Schaefer Anything About Music. Now, on Thursday, September 11th, we're taking the series to the web community site Reddit for an AMA, or Ask Me Anything. I'll be there answering whatever questions you can dream up, as long as it has something to do with music. Want recommendations or advice, or maybe you just want to stump me? Either way, join us at 1:30 Eastern Time, 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Thursday the 11th for a special Ask John Schaefer Anything on Reddit. Meanwhile, the North Carolina-based band Sylvan Esso is returning to New York next week. They're going to play a couple of shows, both of which are sold out. But don't worry, because in a moment, we'll listen back to Sylvan Esso's recent live performance on Soundcheck. But I'm here, she don't know the gravity she holds. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This has been a big year for the electronic duo known as Sylvan Esso. It's made up of vocalist Amelia Meath and electronic musician Nick Sanborn. They released this self-titled debut album. The album's great in part because it spawned a song called Coffee, which I seem to be hearing everywhere this year. And I'm going to hear it again, and so are you, because Sylvan Esso is here to play it in our studio. Here's Coffee, Sylvan Esso, live on Soundcheck.
Just like a name I remember hearing.
Wild rose, warm coffee, mom's gun. Do you love me? Blazing summer, cold coffee, baby's gun. Do you love me? Wrap me in your arms. I can't feel it, but rock me in your arms. I can't feel it, but get up, get down, get up, get down. Feel turn rotation and start. See the next one. Get up, get down, get up, get down. Get up, sun sing with the pair of feet change. Get up, get down, ain't RM. Get up, see the next one right. Get up, get down, get up, get down. Get up, sun sing with the pair of feet change. Get up, get down. get up. Since the same but the fair feet change. Get up, get down.
That is Sylvan Esso live on Soundcheck with the song Coffee, which appears on Sylvan Esso's self-titled debut album. We're getting to hear some of it live in the Soundcheck studio. Sylvan Esso is a duo. Amelia Meath, vocals, and Nick Sanborn, electronics, although a little bit of vocals there as well. And a little cameo, Amelia, from Tommy James and the Shondells.
It's the truth.
My baby does the hanky-panky. How did that end up in this song?
Because I wanted to talk about formulaic dances, or like the idea of that era where, like, you know, you would do the
watusi.
Yeah, you do the watusi and the, you know, the flip and the, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, all right.
Mm-hmm. Just like how in the music video we have kind of American Bandstand vibe.
Yeah. So together you guys are Sylvan Esso, but separately you come from very different kind of, I mean, Amelia, some of us have been following your work with a different kind of group called Mountain Man, which was more Appalachian style.
Mm-hmm.
How did you make the transition to this?
Well, pretty easily. or, you know, I mean, there are so many, with Mountain Man, there is so many things that I wasn't getting to do, mm-hmm. necessarily. Not that, I mean, it was amazing and so wonderful, but at the same time, sometimes you want to shake your butt, dance around.
Uh-huh. So you recorded a song and sent it to Nick. Is that how this worked?
Yeah, Play It Right was originally a Mountain Man song.
Really?
Right? Yeah, I'd written it for Mountain Man.
All of your devotion, I would be more than a small human with her head pressed against your mouth in motion. Play it right, play it right.
So, Nick, what did you think when you first heard that?
I mean, I loved it. I'm a huge Mountain Man fan, and I was really excited to work with it. But it was tough because, you know, usually when you remix something, you get an a cappella for a song that has a different set of instruments behind it.
Right.
And this, the a cappella was the song. So there was a while where I was having a hard time because there was something special about its acapella-ness, and I felt like everything I added was subtraction by addition. But once it kind of clicked, I kind of saw the light and kind of saw like a way this could be a band, you know?
And the band name, Sylvan Esso, is that kind of like referencing the organic and the technological somehow?
Yeah, totally.
Esso being the parent company of what we call in America ExxonMobil.
I don't think we would say that. That's not a relationship I would make here on the radio.
So,
no way.
So they're not sponsoring the band, is what you're saying. The band is Sylvan Esso. It's Nick Sanborn and Amelia Meath who are here with me in the Soundcheck studio. Nick, how much of the... You were a bass player, right?
Yeah.
So in a live setting where you're triggering electronics and processing Amelia's voice and stuff, how much of that changes from performance to performance the way, you know, a quote-unquote regular band would change?
Well, I mean, I set it up. The weird thing about playing a laptop or an instrument is that you have to decide what the instrument is first.
Right.
So there's everyone kind of has to, you know, reinvent the wheel to a certain extent to decide what they want to do. And something I wanted the patch that we used to do was just to have it be easy enough that it would just be fun and I wouldn't be worrying about the exact timing of getting some little clip or something like that. There's a lot of ways to do electronic music where it's very timing-based. You're very on the clock, and it's just not fun for me. I don't... Playing bass is great because you can kind of, you know, fit in with a drummer, and there's a wonderful interplay and looseness there. And computers are just much more rigid.
So have you figured out a way with Amelia where you can get that sense of walking in?
I've set it up in such a way that I can make it sound very different night to night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or at least different enough to me that I feel like I'm participating.
And so you guys are clearly aware of the visual part of the performing element of...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when Nick was programming the patch, he made it so that he made it limited enough so he would have to move and trigger things.
Yeah. So the first song began, Amelia, with you a cappella and then Nick setting a kind of electronic context for it. Does the songwriting always work that way, or can sometimes Nick bring you like a beat or something?
And yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's gone every kind of way it could go at this point.
Yeah. And we've gotten to the point where we just get in a room together and write a song, you know, or I come with a tiny thing and he comes with a tiny thing and we...
Yeah, well, it's all the way from, you know, I have a whole thing or she has a whole a cappella to down just to like, hey, we really like this drum sound.
Right.
Let's use the drum sound.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Now, we heard in Coffee this kind of allusion to 60s music with the Tommy James song, My mm-hmm. Baby Does the Hanky Panky. The next song you're going to do called Wolf. Amelia, you sing this ow kind of thing, which reminds me a little bit of Werewolves of London by Warren Zevon.
Oh,
that's awesome.
You sound surprised. So no one has mentioned this?
Actually, no one has.
That's a great another Wolf reference, though.
I guess that was ow. Yeah.
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 I was just wondering whether that was like an intentional kind of nod to the late Warren Zevon.
I mean, I would love... I'm definitely nodding at him now.
Okay.
To me, the song was really a nod to Michael Hurley's Werewolf. Do you know that one?
No.
Cat Power did a cover of it a while back.
He's a beautiful songwriter.
Yeah. You would love Michael Hurley. You should listen to him.
All right. But first I'm going to listen to you guys.
Okay.
All right. Wolf is the name of the song. The band is Sylvan Esso. They're playing for us here in the Soundcheck studio today. Once again, this song is called Wolf.
The modern wolf, he's kinder, but seem weep, it's a reminder. Don't wear no suit with dog and t-shirt. See how we glide, it makes women shiver. He ain't no jack, his voice is smoother, been bending over, it's just like his father. Does he eat? He only wants a tender sweet. In all the sounds he makes him speak, under all different patterns of sheets, colors blind or dopamine, and they look so good when they were last seen. Ooh.
Sylvanesso is the band, the duo of Nick Sanborn and Amelia Meath, and that song is called Wolf. You'll find it on their debut CD. We recorded Sylvanesso here in the Soundcheck studio back in May. They are returning to New York to play two sold-out shows at Rough Trade Records in Brooklyn on Thursday the 11th and Bowery Ballroom in Manhattan on Friday the 12th. Coming up on the show on Monday, a conversation with drummer and singer and percussionist Sheila E. She just published a new memoir called The Beat of My Own Drum about her years with Prince and Santana and all the rest. Also, music writer Stephen Hayden talks about a project called The American Band Championship Belt. It's an attempt to rank 50 years of musical champions, boxing style, from the Beach Boys to the Black Keys. And we'll have live music from the British group Smoke Fairies. And another reminder, join me on Reddit next Thursday, the 11th, at 1:30 Eastern. I'll be doing an Ask Me Anything, an AMA as they call it, as part of our ongoing Ask John Schaefer Anything About Music project. That's Thursday, the 11th, 1:30 p.m. Eastern on Reddit. Follow us on Facebook or Twitter to get updates and details. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.